Hey guys, we're going to kick things off by getting a little crazy and invoking an NBA idea into the NFL and then trying to let it play out a little bit. Then, as always, we'll get to our news topics with Jenny and Connor and wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And we're in the middle of kind of the wilderness here of the dead period of the NFL calendar. But this is actually a big news day from a sports perspective. By the time you guys listen to this, you're going to know whether or not Zion Williamson is going to the Knicks, to the Cavs, to the Suns, to the Bulls, to the Hawks. We're going to know where he's going probably, unless he's part of a package for Anthony Davis. So I figured this was the right time for me to drop what's been a take of mine for a while, but maybe I haven't made public yet. I think the NFL should have a draft lottery. And I don't understand why the NFL doesn't have a draft lottery. Okay, we've heard how the Dolphins are going through a complete rebuild, but they hate the word tank. We've heard other teams be in this position in the past. The Colts in 2011 after Peyton Manning gets hurt. Like, you have a feeling like there's that quarterback out there, but they hate the word tank. So how do you prevent tanking? Draft lottery is a good way to try to prevent tanking, right? Like, because then whoever has the worst record isn't assured of getting the first pick. On top of that, we know that the NFL loves to create something of nothing, right? Like, they make the schedule show. They make the schedule release a big deal. They make the combine a big deal. They make the draft a big deal. They make pro day. They turn pro days into television shows. So what's more NFL than just creating something out of nothing? This would create an enormous amount of buzz and hype, and everyone would be locked in, and who wouldn't be watching the NFL draft lottery? And so we got a little exercise we're going to do here. First, I want to bring Connor and Jenny in. Are you guys with me?
There would be a draft lottery to who would host the draft lottery, right? Like, there would be like a lottery for the city.
No,
like,
you know,
they would create it into like a multi-part event.
Here's what they would do. Be two nights. The first night, they would go through all of the teams that didn't win, right? So they would go, if it was conducted the same way as the NBA, they would go, I guess, because there are, what, 20 teams in the NFL that don't make the playoffs, right? So they would go 20-3, and that would be the, or 20-4. That would be the first night. And then the drama would hang for 24 hours before they announced the order of the first three picks.
See, I don't think they would ever do it, because then that wouldn't allow the Manning family to control the draft.
Ooh.
So, and that's kind of a big
conspiracy theory.
There would still be time, though. There would still be time.
I guess they could bend one of the envelopes.
I mean, like, what? We're still
dent one of the ping pong balls.
Are we 6 weeks out from the NBA draft? There'd be plenty of time. If you had the same sort of lag time, there'd be plenty of time.
That's true, but it would take an element of control out of their hands, which they've had since the late 60s.
Like, who loses in this scenario?
The only remarkable thing is that it doesn't already exist.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think it makes too much sense, which is why you have to consider the forces behind it, why it's not happening.
Okay, the Illuminati is conspiring so that this doesn't
happen.
So there's
someone in a dark room.
Archie Manning. Yeah. I mean, it all comes back to that.
Okay. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We are actually, just to show how much fun this is, we're going to conduct an NFL draft lottery right here, live on the podcast.
This is such a great idea.
I don't know.
Fueled by your morning fruit cup that costs $7.46. This is why you invest in breakfast.
That's right.
I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work, but what we've done, scientific method here. Like, the one thing that was hard about it is, like, the NBA, like, formula is so kind of convoluted now. So how do we recreate the NBA formula? It's sort of hard to do. It used to be easier when they had the ping pong balls. We probably could have done that. But Mitch Goldich, one of our editors, actually pointed me to the Tankathon website, and there is, in fact, a lottery simulator in there. Now, the one flaw with this is that we can't put every non-playoff team in. So we can't put all 20 in, because there are only 14 teams in the NBA that don't make the playoffs. There are 20 in the NFL. So our apologies in advance to the Panthers, to the Redskins, to the teams that didn't make the playoffs, to the Steelers, to the Titans, to the teams that didn't make the playoffs that are edged out of our little exercise here. We're going to include 14 teams in, and we're going to assign NBA teams to NFL teams.
Wow, this is really fun.
So how about this, right?
Okay.
So the Knicks, they are the Arizona Cardinals. The Cavs are the Niners. The Suns are the Jets. The Bulls are the Raiders. The Hawks are the Bucks. The Wizards are the Giants. The Pelicans are the Jaguars. The Grizzlies are the Lions. The Mavericks are the Bills. The Wolves are the Broncos. The Lakers are the Bengals. The Hornets are the Raiders. Or no, the Packers. I'm sorry. The Hornets are the Packers. The Heat are the Dolphins. Oh, there's one that actually matches up. There you go.
Nice.
And then the Kings are the Falcons. So I am going to hit the simulate lottery button here just so it's above board so everybody can see it. I'm going to do it from here. All right. And we'll see who wins the lottery. There we go. Okay. The Jets. The New York Jets have won the lottery.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Okay, so the New York Jets will be picking first. The Oakland Raiders have the second pick. With the third pick is going to be, oh, wow, this is a big one. The Bengals all the way up from the 11th slot.
Wow. Okay.
So the Bengals go all the way up, and then the order resets, of course, then. So then you have, so I'm going to take this off, and so you take out the Jets. Cardinals really got screwed here. I know you guys are very, very sympathetic. okay, so our draft order now. So what we're going to do now is we're actually going to redraft the NFL draft before we get into our news topics of the week. So now we've got the Jets with the first pick, the Raiders with the second pick, the Bengals with the third pick, the Cardinals with the fourth pick, the Niners with the fifth pick, the Bucks with the sixth pick. So what we've decided, Connor's going to have the first pick. This was regardless of who the team was. So Connor will pick for the Jets. Jenny, you have the Raiders pick. I have the Bengals pick at number three. Then we'll do it one more time. We're not going to go through the top 14, but we'll redraft. So with the first pick, and the way it should be, 2019 NFL draft, Connor Orr, the New York Jets select.
Wow.
Do you stand pat with what you had, or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you'd probably take Quinnen Williams, right?
Okay, Quinnen Williams.
I would take Quinnen Williams, number one.
This would actually be a spot where there might be a trade, actually, based on the way that it played out.
For sure,
right? So, but we can't allow trades here, so it's unfortunate that we didn't have a team with a quarterback need there at the top. Okay, so Quinnen Williams to the Jets at number one. Jenny, number two, the Raiders.
I'm going to spice things up and go with Kyler Murray.
Oh,
no.
There it is. There it is.
Let me just.
So Derek Carr is now on the block.
Derek Carr is now on the trading block. That's correct.
Derek Carr is now on the block. Okay, at number three, I think this becomes simple for the Bengals. And I'm not doing this because of where he went to school. Nick Bosa, number three to the Bengals.
Bosa stays in Ohio.
Stays in Ohio. There it is. Easy storyline. At number four, the Cardinals select.
I mean, I don't know. We watched.
Is Rosen going to stay on the team now?
Yeah, I mean, we saw kind of how scattershot their draft room was on their team website anyway.
Definitely.
So, you know, imagine
definitely
if we threw this into the loop. I mean, at this point, anything's possible. And so I'm going to go with TJ Hockenson from Iowa.
Wow.
Help out your boy,
wow,
Rosen. It's all about production. The Hawk.
Wow, there
all
it
right
is.
Number four.
All right, with the fifth
Let's
pick.
Go.
The 49ers select.
The fifth pick. The 49ers select.
I've clearly upset the board.
The board is upside down right now.
I'll go with Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. There
Good
you
pick.
Go. Same position. That makes sense. Sensible pick there.
Thank you.
And you know what? We started with chalk. We'll stick with chalk there at number six.
Devin White.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Devin White, who they had their eyes on all along. I like that, guys. Like, I think, how much fun would that be?
That was a lot of fun.
Like, how much fun would that be if we actually had an NFL draft lottery? Make
I would
it
love
happen.
It.
Make it happen.
I would love it. I think it's a great idea.
I mean, the ratings for that, like the ratings for that would be insane, right?
When would they hold it?
You'd want to spread it out a little bit, right? So maybe they would move the combine to accommodate it. Or maybe you would do it like the week after the Super Bowl, because that's kind of
ooh,
a dead time.
Great, great.
Like, so it's like right before the combine, right? Like, and then they would spend like an inordinate amount of like both television shows. Remember, we have night one and night two. They would be spending an inordinate amount of time promoting the combine.
They would. They could host it in Vegas.
Oh. Come on.
I mean, how good is this?
Is this a podcast or a board meeting at 345 Park?
We're just doing Roger Goodell's job for him. This is a tap-in.
This is amazing. God. Just amazing. Make it happen, guys. Make it happen, NFL. We need an NFL draft lottery. All right, we're going to jump into our news items for the week now. Obviously, we're going to get way more serious here now because there's so much going on in the NFL. News item number one, and by the way, I have not actually looked at these. I purposefully stayed away from looking at them because Connor wrote them. So this is my first reading of these as we speak right now. Connor actually stepped in this week, as we want him to do every week, but sometimes he does. With the pros, I guess would be the right.
Yeah, this is an original.
Okay. we have five original news items of the week. News item number one, Kyler Murray, who in a recent episode of Good Morning Football was referred to by analyst Peter Schrager as the second or perhaps third best arm in football. Wow, that's a proclamation. Makes his rookie camp debut this week. Can he live up to the expectations?
You can just say no.
It's hard because I just think that here's the thing with Kyler. I think the situation, for almost every quarterback, there are very few quarterbacks who are good enough to be exempt from this. For almost every quarterback, you're dependent on your situation. Do I trust his offensive line? Do I trust his receivers? Do I trust the infrastructure of the organization around him? That's hard right now because look what happened to Josh Rosen last year. So I think he can. I think he has the ability to. I don't think he's transcendent to the point where he can overcome if things are a disaster around him. And to be fair, there are very few quarterbacks who can. You know what I mean? So there are very few quarterbacks that are just – I think luck was sort of this way, and he's one of the few where they can just sort of – beat their circumstances, and I think luck to some degree beat his circumstances at points in Indianapolis. I don't know if Kyler's that player.
I think it's, we've already had some little hiccups, right, during conditioning. His feet hurt because he got the wrong pair of Nike shoes, Kyler Murray, and he was trying to break in new cleats and he had foot pain, and so we're kind of sputtering, right, to whatever is going on right now. But I think it's interesting. I think not enough people, and probably because we don't know, we don't have any information, but we're not talking enough about how Cliff Kingsbury is going to adapt this for the NFL and what this thing is going to look like. It could be fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I thought there was someone from RotoWorld who made a good point last night that the Cardinals were, I think, 32nd the last 2 years in the NFL in plays run per game. And Cliff Kingsbury's led college football each of the last 6 years. And I mean, that's a drastic difference in an offense.
That requires getting first downs, though.
Yeah.
That requires moving the chains. That requires efficiency. And I think Cliff can do it. I think Cliff's got a good offensive mind.
It's Evan Silva, by the way.
I mean, do you trust the talent that he's working with? I think that's part of the equation too.
Yeah, because we're just not sure where this team is headed, right? And we all watched the Inside the Draft Room video. We referenced it earlier in the podcast that was posted by the team, and yeah, there was a lot of confusion in there. And they make the trade, they send Josh Rosen to Miami, get the second round pick back. And it seems like they were unsure who to use that pick on.
Right.
And Kingsbury's kind of like, I like Isabella, which is true. I'm sure he likes him, but there wasn't really, was he a good value pick there is a big question. So I think it just sort of illuminated, there's going to be a learning curve for Kingsbury in the NFL, right? It's, it's not like you like a player, you recruit him, you bring him to the team. It's a different thing. And then also this questions of should Keim, there were natural points for the Cardinals to move on from Keim and they didn't take them. And so now you've kind of got this awkward pairing, right? And so I do think there's legitimate questions about, how the organization is structured and how decisions are being made. That doesn't mean they won't be successful. And obviously, Kyler's an exciting talent and it's an interesting project and it's an interesting test just to see, Baker was successful, right? But, not every player is the same. Just because Baker was successful his rookie year doesn't mean that Kyler will be successful. Totally different situations that they're going into.
I'm gonna be interested to see how the first couple draft classes with Cliff there work out, because I think there is an advantage that you might have if you're Cliff Kingsbury and that you've coached against some of these guys, you've recruited some of these guys, and so you have an institutional knowledge, and I think there is evidence that this can work. Pete Carroll his first 3 years in Seattle, they were lights out, right? And you start to look at some of the guys further down the line that they were that they wound up with, right? Like Richard Sherman was like an LA kid, and like he had like Pete had like institutional knowledge of why Richard Sherman wasn't as successful as maybe he should have been at Stanford. Same with Doug Baldwin. Like he didn't draft Taylor Mays. He drafted Earl Thomas instead. And I remember at the time, it sounds ludicrous now, but at the time there was that question, like, why isn't he drafting the safety that he had at USC? And so I do think that there's that piece of it. And that's why it's so interesting to me when you look at their draft. Like, they draft not only Kyler Murray, who he coached against, they draft Hakeem Butler, who he coached against. Like, there are other guys, Byron Murphy, who he recruited. Like, I do think that there's that piece of it's going to be really interesting going forward, you know, because I think that there is that advantage that they have, and it won't last forever. It won't last for very long, but for at least in the short term, they do have that.
Or it could also be Chip Kelly, right, where, you know, you kind of end up drafting a bunch of guys that you're familiar with, and,
right,
you know, that doesn't really yield anything because they had a tough time in the yep. first round for the first couple of years.
Yep. And the cleat situation just sort of underscores why these rookie minicamps are probably not a great idea anyway, right? I mean, you guys aren't – Kyler Murray said, you know, I haven't been in cleats for months. And that's the whole point why a lot of these coaches are moving away from it, right? They've been doing combine-specific drills, you know, pro-day-specific drills. All of a sudden, they're thrown into a mini camp. And we've all seen it where, like, teams hold out high draft picks, especially if they're, like, a lineman in the trenches. They don't want them with other guys who might be less talented. So I think the way that a lot of teams are starting to do it now, where it's just, like, an orientation clinic, makes a lot more sense.
Well, yeah, and Adam Gase was one of the ones that went, like, full-on. Like, to we're not even going on the field. And my understanding was that was actually a result of them seeing what happened with Dante Fowler in Jacksonville in 2016. Mark Dominic, somebody else I talked to about like the value of these rookie camps the last few weeks, he said to me, like, at the end in Tampa, they actually took the draft picks off the field.
Yeah,
they
said there, we've seen that before too.
There was value. And his point was, there is value because you want to bring tryout guys in and you want to get an assessment on your undrafted guys, you know? And so, like, all right, like, let's see our undrafted guys versus some tryout guys, see how they match up. And maybe you wind up with, I mean, look, Adam Thielen is like the outlier. Like, you're not going to find that all the time. But maybe you find a guy who can be the 40th guy in your roster, which has some value. So there is some value in it. Like, being able to get tryout guys out there and look at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the Jets took Quinton Coples off the field the year they drafted him on the second day, right? Yeah. So it's a lot of times you just kind of, for the safety of the high picks, it doesn't make a ton of sense.
Well, and you think about what they've been through too. Like, if you think about, like, all right, so first they just finished a college season, right? Then they're in essence just training for a track meet. That's what it is, right? Like, for the most part, like, what they're going to be doing is Olympic type testing. Now, all of a sudden, then you get them back out on the field at their pro day, at the private workouts, right. And then you're putting them on a lot of them on a de facto banquet circuit.
Right.
You know
well,
what
yeah,
I mean?
And like, I mean, a lot.
They're
right.
flying from team
exactly.
to team.
Exactly, and they're out of their training regimen.
Right.
Yep.
Right, so it makes all the sense in the world to scale back, and I think a lot of teams have. Jenny Connor, who wants to take news item number two?
I can take it since I
there
threw it out.
There was a little bit of a rewrite.
Jenny had some suggested edits.
I noticed the the self editing. So
probably for the best. in a much needed victory for rich people everywhere, a Florida judge ruled that Robert Kraft will probably not be in trouble because he has enough lawyers to pound the overtaxed district attorney with a hailstorm of emotions and various other legal trappings. The tape, while described publicly, remains sealed.
All right, so I think we have to have the preamble here that nobody really wants to see the tape, right? Like,
sure. Yeah.
So the issue
it's not about the tape.
It's not about seeing or not seeing the tape. It's about people being treated the same way through the judicial process, which, I mean, I think
I touched on it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Michael McCann always does great legal analysis for our website, and he had a good piece pointing out sort of where the judge was coming from here. And law enforcement didn't do a great job of sort of having the necessary protections in place, right? So they're filming people who were female clients who were not engaging in sex acts at the salon, and they were also being filmed. And so there were a lot of privacy issues that came to play. They didn't necessarily handle the traffic stop the right way. And the case in a lot of ways hasn't been as buttoned up on the authorities' end as it should be.
It's very Florida.
Yes. And like, you know, the human trafficking charges have sort of faded away, but that doesn't mean that some of those things, the initial reports were invalid. I mean, it's very common, I think, for trafficking victims to, the reason that they're stuck in these situations is because they can't get out or can't say anything. So the fact that some of your witnesses that you believe would cooperate would decide not to would not be unexpected. And that obviously was a big linchpin of the case as well, for installing the cameras. So basically things are kind of falling apart in terms of the legal case itself.
And the crazy thing about it to me is like that, I mean, how much would you say he spent? Like conservatively $5 million maybe, right? It's a guess, but like something like that, right? He admitted he did it. He's
right.
For the most part, this is all about that video not getting out. He spent $5 million to make sure a video didn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And it may still. I mean, this doesn't mean it won't, because right, there's been reports that people have been shopping it.
Right.
There's certainly people who have seen the video.
Right.
Access to it.
It's a little different than Kareem Hunt or Ray Rice, because those were in the hands of like hotel security, right? Where this was law enforcement. I believe that would make it more difficult for the video to leak, because any hotel security guy gets a hold of that and just says, okay, I'm going to sell it. Like that's different than it being in law enforcement's hands.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting now, because it's all on, I mean, really the major arbitration at this point is going to come down again to the hands of the commissioner, you know, and he's going to have to make a decision now. You know, this is certainly conduct that's detrimental to the league. And so where do you put that? How do you punish the owner of a team?
And I think that you have to, I mean, look, it's different because they're cases of violence, right? Like, so Ezekiel Elliott is a case of violence. Ben Roethlisberger was a case of violence. So like, that's a little different. But if you're one of those guys and you said, well, like I wasn't convicted and I was sanctioned, like why shouldn't an owner be sanctioned? I think you have a real point. Like, right. I think you have a real case if you're one of these players to look at it and say, well, wait a second. Like you made an example of me because you wanted to show everybody how tough you are. And then one of your own does this and now it's not the same. And the thing that's really interesting about this to me is because of the trophy ceremony, because of the banner dropping, because of everything that's going to go along with what's going to happen on that Sunday night, like even a 1-week suspension is going to be felt. So I think that like Robert Kraft is going to, one way or another, like the presence of what goes into a week one for the championship team, like that is going to have an effect on Robert Kraft. That's going to sort of reopen the story on national television.
Yeah. And,
or maybe it won't if they're told to shut up about it. I don't know. But maybe you think it would.
And the potential release of the video through non-official channels would also reopen the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still think like he may have been better off just falling on the sword in the first place. You know, and like because it's been a discussion point. Like, if the video gets out anyway, then I think you'd absolutely say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like it just feels to me like, you know, maybe just fall on the sword in the first place.
I agree with that. And I think unfortunately, when lawyers get involved, they're inclined to take this aggressive tactic, right?
Yeah.
But I all along thought that was the best way to go, to talk about the mistake publicly.
Yeah.
And you know what, I know there's been an effort to distance from the sex trafficking because that's another level, but I think
that's the thing. No one thinks he like if that was happening there, no one thinks he knew it. But when you do something illegal, you open yourself up.
Yeah, but this has been an entirely different path led by the lawyers, you know, the legal case is, you know, it's been successful in that regard to this point, but then there's all these other things that are outside of the outside of the legal world.
All right, Jenny, news item number three.
With a recent report from The Athletic stating that the 49ers are out, Hard Knocks is essentially down to four possible: the Lions, the Giants, the Raiders, and Washington. While all signs are pointing toward the attention-hungry Gruden and the television-savvy Mayock as a natural choice, which team would you most like to see? A little editorializing again from the Oracle over here. So I have zero interest in the Lions. Just got to be honest there. You know, I think the Raiders would be the most intriguing, obviously, because we're all wondering what's going on in that building. But they didn't even want cameras in their draft room.
Or scouts.
Or
for that matter.
Right. So how much pushback? Well, I mean, obviously.
That's a key point is cooperation. Right. Like, what level of cooperation are you getting?
My pitch, you know, I wrote the newsletter on this morning, not on watchability, but, you know, which team should raise their hand and volunteer, because regardless of how invasive it feels, it is a chance for teams to set the agenda, kind of, right, and to brand themselves if they do it the right way. Now, the Browns are an example of the opposite of that, where you kind of put your Discord on display by not editing this stuff or not kind of crunching it down. But my case was for the Giants. I think this is a great idea for them because you have the staff that can handle it. You have an ability to give Eli, you know, you could do an episode about Eli, about all that he's meant to the franchise, about how he's helping out Daniel Jones. You can position Saquon Barkley as the face of your franchise, which you've been wanting to do anyway. And you can give Dave Gettleman the chance to be looked at not just as this dismissive person in a press conference, because I do think he has a good story and he's a good person. And I think if you look at it through the lens of Hard Knocks, I think he becomes more likable to the fan base. And I think the same a little bit goes for Pat Shurmur too, who the fans don't know anything about.
Right, because I mean, Pat's a good decent guy. Like, he's just very vanilla.
Yeah.
The team I want to see, and this is like based on just like a TV, like what I think the TV production would wind up being, is the Redskins. Because I think there are so many guys in that building that just wouldn't be able to help themselves. You know what I mean? Like, that would just be like I don't think Bruce Allen would be able to speak with a filter. Like, now he may lie, but he would, I think he, like, a bunch of stuff would spill out. Dan Snyder, I think we have this image of him, but he like never speaks publicly.
Nope.
You never see him out there. You see his actions. So I think it'd be fascinating to see him. Like, how would they portray him in something like this?
It would not be a horrible idea for them to, after all these reports of internal discord this offseason, to come out with a unified front and get behind your rookie quarterback.
Right. And Jay Gruden, I think, would be fantastic on it. Like, I think Jay just has the personality for it the same way his brother does. I just think with the Redskins, like, I think there would be, like, real entertainment value to that. For the same reason, like, the 2010 Jets, right? And it wasn't bad for that team, by the way.
It was like, great.
Everybody said, like, oh, this is going to be a circus. Watch it boil over. They went to the AFC Championship game for a second straight year that year, despite, like, their best player holding out for almost the entire offseason, right?
And there's a whole episode on it.
Right. So, like, I think that would be in the same way, like, with those 2010 Jets, you had so many guys that just sort of couldn't help themselves and just, like, from Cromartie to Rex to Mike T, like, all these guys just couldn't help them. Like, they eventually, like just loosened the collar and just, like, let it go, right? I think the Redskins would sort of be the same way.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of entertainment value in pretty much all of the options, except, like I said, for the Lions, just because they don't have the same national profile as the other teams.
I just don't know if you get a ton of cooperation.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. So
I think you get, like, it would just be fighting back, you know?
Right.
The Raiders, maybe I didn't say the Raiders because they're too obvious, but, I mean, from Antonio Brown to John Gruden to Mike Mayock to Mark Davis, who would be absolute. I mean, like, what do they do with him? Like, that to me would be really, really interesting. Cleveland Farrell, the fourth pick, who everybody thought was going to be like the 20th pick. Like, where is he in all of this? Like, the Raiders would be really interesting too.
I think that there's just some things, you know, I made the case for them as well behind the Giants because you're entering a new market at some point. You need to develop a fan base beyond Oakland.
You're talking big, it's obviously.
Yeah, and there's so many loose ends to this team, right? I mean, you know, I think the fact that, you know, you should probably make an effort to button up the fact that everybody thinks that Derek Carr is not comfortable there. I mean,
right.
You know, and I think that there are more people that like it there than we think in Oakland and playing for John Gruden, and this is a chance to, you know, to come out and to show everybody that, to open the door and say, hey, this, you know, everything's fine here. This is a professionally run operation.
There can, it can often be very humanizing, right?
Yes,
and
right.
You, oh, yeah. You, but it could be either very humanizing or very illuminating, sometimes both. I think with the Browns, the problem was there was just so much internal discord. Not a problem. I mean, that was great for the show, obviously. But in terms of for the people involved, right? I think there was so much internal discord. But like for the Giants, like you said, Connor, I don't get the sense that there's internal discord. I think it would humanize Daniel Jones, who's been getting a ton of backlash and is a very lovely young man if you talk to him.
Yeah,
people,
I mean, like
people
Ross
love
Tucker,
Barkley.
Like,
I mean, how he will look great. He'll have his adorable daughter and, you know, on camera, and everyone will love him even more.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Ross Tucker actually wrote a good column on that, on the whole idea that, like, he said, now I'm rooting for Daniel Jones because, like, he's sort of like, Daniel Jones was just guy was just caught in the crossfire. This isn't his fault.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Like, totally.
Like he was just absolutely caught in the crossfire of everything.
Like, there was that story about during the draft when whoever filmed his house during the draft,
yeah,
or the camera crew that was at his family's house or whatever, someone was there the next day to interview him when he went home. He, like, packed up their camera equipment and put it in the car when the camera people were done with it. Like, you know, and even if he's not going to be good, Hard Knocks is just an opportunity to show that part of him, right? Like,
right,
he's a good guy, he's got a good head on his shoulders, and, you know, and that's that, you know?
And the thing is, like, Hard Knocks does have enough influence now, and we'll get on to the next news topic after this, but Hard Knocks has enough influence now where it's going to be a sports radio topic, especially in New York, right? Like, so if Daniel Jones comes off as a really good guy or they show him a certain way, people are probably going to be talking about it on the radio the next day, and that can drive narratives. That can drive,
yeah,
that can drive a guy's image, you know? And I think it's, like you said, I think you guys are spot on that. Like, that it could be a chance for the Giants to sort of turn the page.
Chuck a win to the morning huddle. Morning,
yeah,
huddle. I just really like making or puns.
All right. News topic number four. Cementing his status as a human speed bump. I don't know where we're going here. Joe Flacco said this week that he's not there to help Drew Lock and wants to hold on to the starting job in Denver, which was something he was unable to do in Baltimore. Should old people be required to help young people, or should the football world mirror finance and politics? That is a lot to consider there.
That it is. You know, I don't have any problem with what Flacco said. I have zero problem with it. I mean, doing the Jimmy Garoppolo story last summer, like, his family was like, yeah, I mean, Brady was always nice to him, but it wasn't like, you know, like, it was.
Brady remembered how he got his job, too. Like, that was part of that.
Yeah, but it wasn't, right. It was like, yeah, it wasn't like, you know, you could watch from him as he's doing the preparation he needs to do to be a starting quarterback, right? It wasn't like, tag along and I'm going to make you the guy. It's basically, you can just learn by watching.
Right.
So I don't have a problem with what Flacco said.
I don't have a huge problem with it either. I think, like, a rookie has to earn it, right? And so a lot of people brought up the Alex Smith example. Let's remember that Patrick Mahomes really earned that, right? Like, you heard stories coming out of Kansas City that year that Mahomes was being redshirted, like, of these little things that Mahomes was doing. Like, he'd take his receivers after practice, right? He'd want to throw after practice because he wasn't getting a ton of reps once they got closer to the season, right? So he'd make a point, I'm not taking Alex's receivers with me. And so he would make a point, like, the guys that he was taking with him were, like, practice squad guys. So he wasn't, like, creating any sort of drama. And I think, like, Patrick Mahomes had a way about him where he, like, earned that. And so Alex Smith is like, okay, and this is human nature. Okay, you get it. So I'm going to show you this. I'm going to show you that. Hey, come over here. I'll show you this, right? I don't, like, why I don't mind Flacco saying this, like, one, I think, like, the rookie has to earn that to some degree, right? Like, get to know the guy a little bit before you automatically say, like, I'm opening up everything to everybody, right? So let him earn it a little bit. Number two, he said the same thing last year in Baltimore. It wasn't a problem, right? Like, him and Lamar Jackson was not a problem. And I like that. I think we have to judge him not just on his words, but his actions. And everything you heard come out of Lamar Jackson's mouth about it was that Joe was actually pretty good to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of revisionist history there. I mean, there was games when Joe Flacco was firing the ball like 10 miles above Lamar Jackson's head when he came in for different packages, like clearly making it, you know, a scene about him not wanting Lamar Jackson on the field with him, you know, during some of this stuff. But I think towards the end, I mean, Joe handled that last playoff game superbly. And he came out and said that the fans who were booing Lamar Jackson and wanted Flacco in were wrong. And, you know, I think that there was a definite positive end to that. Mm-hmm. But there was certainly an element of unhappiness there. I mean, the whole narrative being pushed that spring was that Joe Flacco is being pushed by Lamar Jackson, and this is the best he's ever going to be because of this anger. And if you're a coach that thinks that you can foster that, if you can handle those attitudes, then that's fine. But right. If not, then I don't think I don't know if I would want that on my team.
I think we can also use the example of Favre and Rodgers, where that wasn't comfortable for either of those guys, and that's on Favre for making it that way for three freaking years. But they went to an NFC title game in Favre's last year there. So it didn't have an adverse effect on the team, and it clearly didn't have an adverse effect on Rodgers' development, right? So there's just not one way to do it, I think, is the point. You know, like, there's just not one way to do it. And look, Drew Lock comes in there, and Drew Lock is a good guy. Over the next 6 or 7 weeks, I think they'll be fine.
Plus, he said, it's not my job to do it, right? That doesn't mean he won't help him. He's just saying, that's not my main job. And right. It's not his main job.
And that's actually, like, honestly, like, that's what you know, when I talked to Shermer about, and he may have said this in the press conference too, but like, Shermer told me that when they were on the clock about to take Jones at the 6th pick, he called Eli. And the one thing he said to Eli was, it's not your job to coach this guy. It's your job to play quarterback. Like, your job is to be the best quarterback for the team, which is basically exactly
what Flacco said.
What Flacco
said.
Right.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Right. Connor does, though.
I think it's fine. I just think, you know, you have to be a coach that has to decide what you want to do. If you're the foster competition coach, yep, and you know that you can manage those egos, you have to know yourself. Like, yep, Vic Fangio has to know that, you know, I've been in this situation before. I can pull both of these guys aside and I can make sure that everybody's fine and, you know, that everybody ticks the right way. But if you can't, then the leader of your team is constantly pissed and blackballing somebody else in the position room.
Here's the bottom line, too. Bottom line is, if they win, it's not an issue, and Flacco keeps his job. If they don't, I think we almost certainly see Drew Lock. Like, every piece of evidence
100%.
That we have, every piece of evidence that we have, like, you can talk about redshirting and giving a guy a year, like, all that stuff goes out the window if you're 4-6. In October, right?
Totally.
Or in November.
Totally.
So, like, this is all on, like, Flacco, best way for Joe to keep Drew Lock off the field is for the team to win. If the team doesn't win, he's got no hope.
Yeah, I mean, it's a typical freak out over a comment in May that may or may not actually be relevant.
Right. Speaking of freak outs, I think news item number 5 concerns somebody who is pretty good at creating freak outs, right?
I would say so.
He creates freak outs.
I would say so. Should I take this one?
I think Jenny's not ready. I
can do it. After spending one of his first 60 days as a Brown in Cleveland, Odell Beckham has returned to the Mistake on the Lake to begin voluntary workouts.
Ouch.
Will the mercurial star grow to love this grizzled city in Northeast Ohio, or is he bound for the bright lights of Los Angeles? I just want to add that we Googled names for the city of Cleveland, wanting to, like, mix things up, you know, like the Queen City or whatever.
Yes.
So the top nickname that came up was the Forest City. And we just thought that nobody actually calls it the Forest City.
Cleveland is the Forest City.
No one calls it the Forest City.
Yes.
No.
The inspiration is a reference to Cleveland describing a highly sophisticated society amid a heavily forested environment in Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, which contains the Frenchman's observations of the United States in the 1830s. So I would say that instead of using the Forest City, we went for
Mistake
on the Lake. There were other options that were poor, like the Sixth City,
to correct you guys, I actually think it's Mistake by the Lake.
Oh, what did I say?
I think it's, you guys said Mistake on the Lake. I think Connor wrote Mistake on the Lake. It's actually Mistake.
I guess technically the city is not on water, so that's my fault. It is.
It is by water, but not on water.
I think this all depends on winning and losing. Like I same as with Flacco, right?
Forest City, yeah, definitely.
if they win, like Odell Beckham will be happy there. He'll be celebrated. That's one of those cities where if they win, every one of those guys will be a hero forever, right? Like it's like the Eagles. Like the Eagles won. Like Nick Foles is a hero there forever, no matter what happens the rest of his life, right? And if you win in Cleveland after everything that they've been through, losing the team, then the team that replaces the team that became the Ravens, just going through 2 decades of being an absolute tire fire, right? If you're part of the group that changes all of that, like, you're going to be a hero there. And I think, like, any player would love to be in that sort of environment. I think the actual city itself only comes into play if you're losing. Right, like if the team's 6-10 and the organization's a discombobulated mess, then yeah, it's like this sucks and I'm in Cleveland, so F this, I want to leave. But if they're winning, then I don't think it's an issue.
I don't understand this as much, and you know, I remember our colleague Robert Klimko had that poll of agents that he had where guys didn't want to go in free agency, you know, or least attractive destinations. And I can understand Buffalo a bit because you don't want to dig your car out, you know, in the winter before you go to practice and stuff like that. But otherwise, like, aren't most cities like, I mean, you have your water views and some of the things with New York City, but most cities have the same stuff anyway, right?
Right.
I mean,
and
like,
you're not there year round.
Yeah, you're only
there for
like
4 months.
Yeah. You could find a nice, you know.
And you're so busy if you're a football player, you're so busy during those 4 months anyway that it's like, I don't know. I think it's overblown. I'm with you on that. Like Cleveland, you can find a perfectly fine place to live in Cleveland. Like you can find good restaurants, you can find bar, like everything's there.
I watched this thing on this guy from the Lakers. I don't know anything about the NBA, but he was in a new place in Los Angeles and he was walking around and he found this pizzeria that made like lobster ravioli pizza and it's his favorite thing to eat now. And like, you know, just Odell, just get out and discover Cleveland, you know, go to Great Lakes Brewing.
Yeah. So I think as we talked about, you know, off-season program attendance is always going to be a storyline, despite the fact that I don't think it actually matters. It doesn't have one bearing one way or the other. I think the only reason with Odell there is a question here is because he's made several social media posts in which he seems sad to be leaving New York. And I don't think it's so much about Cleveland itself, but I think it's you get drafted into the, you know, the greatest city in the world and you become a star there and you are shipped off unceremoniously. And so I do think there is a question just in terms of that transition personally that he's making. And it's nothing to do with whether or not he's at the offseason program. But how is he handling just sort of his career being uprooted through no choice of his own, right? The other question I think in Cleveland is that there's a lot of players there like that who have been who have a chip on their shoulder, whose career they've been relocated for one reason or another.
Well, Baker Mayfield in college.
Yeah, I mean, and they have, that's perhaps that's part of their identity, and that will you know, forge them together. But I do think it's also something that Freddie Kitchens will have to manage because there's a lot of guys that have personal chips.
I mean, I think the best example is the Packers, right? When I was a little kid, the Packers were a nowhere franchise that played half of its games in Milwaukee. No one talked about them in the context of like the 60s Lombardi teams, right? No one was romanticizing them. Back when like Don Majkowski was the quarterback and they were drafting Tony Mandarich, like no one wanted to go there, right?
How old are you?
ouch. I wasn't in my 20s.
Our 48-year-old co-host, Albert Breer.
I'm actually, it's less than a decade
away.
Sorry,
just had to get a dig in.
I don't think, the Packers, what changed? Why is that such a romantic place to play now? Because they started winning. Because Mike Holmgren came, and then Brett Favre came, and Ron Wolf was there, and then all of a sudden they start winning, and now you know what? It's not so bad for a free agent to go to. We had like this offseason, Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, who could have gone anywhere, chose to go to Green Bay. And like, I just think that winning changes everything. It changes the way you look at it. Like, I'm sure if you're having this discussion in 1991, no one's talking about Buffalo the way that you just described it, right?
That's probably true.
Because yeah. So it's like,
well, you do still have to dig your car out. So that, there's that.
But you have to in Green Bay too.
That's true.
It's Jenny, if you were a mercurial star that was traded somewhere else, would your first instinct be to appear in the town and try to garner like a love from the fans, or would you want to remain mysterious and mercurial until the season started?
Definitely remain mysterious and mercurial until the season started. Yeah, but that's just my.
Would they be calling you aloof then, you think, or?
You know, I think I've been called aloof before, so it might not be the first time. Maybe I'm the wrong person to ask here.
See, I'd go like
I think what you're talking about is like you don't want to put your cards on the table yet, so you're just trying to make sure people don't know where you're coming from you make up your mind on how you feel about it.
Well, I think the play is to just go to whatever, you know, the place where everybody eats, you know, the best pizza place in Cleveland, and just buy everybody a piece of pizza, you know. I think that's the play.
There you go. Just can't make it a steakhouse. Got to be a pizza place, right?
You don't want to be spending an outrageous amount of money. So.
All right. Well, we were all over the place this week. Appreciate you guys coming out. All right. We'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there. Plus, you get an answer here. Question number one. This is from Jay Smooth. That's at J_Smooth25. Why don't star quarterbacks with leverage include no franchise tag clauses in their contracts? Why is Breeze the only one who has that clause? I would say the main reason why is because teams don't want to create precedents for other players. And so the way that they avoid doing different things with quarterback contracts, whether it's fully guaranteeing them, whether it's adding clauses like a no franchise tag clause, a no trade clause, they don't want other players to come and ask for those things. They want to be able to say, we didn't give one to our quarterback, so we're not giving one to you. And so how do you get to the point where a player, you know, Breeze, a Brady, whoever else, is willing to take one of those asks off to the table? You give them more money. And a lot of times these teams are willing to pay beyond what they would maybe be comfortable paying to get the sort of structure they want, to get the sort of language they want. Question number two is from Ward. It's at Ward29672985. Where does Ndamukong Suh end up? I'm going to give you the Seattle Seahawks. I think it makes sense. He's got a relationship with Ziggy Ansah, who just signed there. They have a need on the defensive line. They could certainly use him. He'd be a scheme fit. The interesting thing about Ndamukong Suh to me is, what will entice him to sign somewhere? Because this is a guy, and trust me, I've heard over the last few weeks that he's not going somewhere on a discount. And this is a guy who, over the course of his career, and believe this or not, there's only been 1 year in his career where he hasn't taken home eight figures. Okay? He's been in the league for 9 years now. So every year except for his rookie year where there were some deferred payments, he's taken home at least eight figures. So if you're him and you've made at least $10 million in each of the last eight seasons, are you willing to put your body through another NFL season for less than that? That's the question. So it's going to take somebody with some space, some flexibility. The Seahawks have more flexibility than they did in the past. It wouldn't surprise me if he wound up there. It seems to make a ton of sense. He's, of course, originally from Portland, so there's another layer for you. Question number three, this is from Stephen Dudnoth, that's at Stephen Dudnoth. Why would the Cowboys budge on Dak? No team values him more than they do. I think the reason why the Cowboys would sign Dak now is really threefold. All right, one, you want to take care of your quarterback. Dak's a popular guy in that locker room. You want to send the right message. It allows you to build forward with some certainty. if you could take care of your quarterback, now you know the landscape when you're trying to take care of Amari Cooper, when you're trying to take care of Ezekiel Elliott, when you're trying to take care of potentially Jalen Smith and Byron Jones, and down the line somebody like Leighton Vander Esch. Having certainty on what your quarterback's going to be making is important. Number two, he's been pretty good the last couple of years, and waiting, if you wait, you risk being in the position where you're going year to year, which is not where you want to be with your quarterback, which is the Kirk Cousins situation. If he gets to next year and you have to tag him, now all of a sudden do you tag him 2 years in a row and then you risk losing your quarterback? Now all of a sudden you're in a little bit of a no man's land, and I don't think you want to be there. That's a good situation for a player, not such a good situation for a team. I know franchise tags have the stigma around them. For a quarterback, being franchised 2 years in a row and then getting a chance to go to the open market isn't that big a deal. Is actually a good thing. And then number three, the market could change significantly. The market's gone up in a big, big way over the course of the last 3 years. We've seen basically the market go up 50% since early 2016. The market at that point was at about $22 million. The market now is at $35 million. So more than 50%. So what does Patrick Mahomes get? What does Carson Wentz get? Those guys have the potential to take home $40 million a year. And now if you're asking Dak to take $30 million per, which I think around where this is going to land, if you ask Dak to take $30 million per in an environment where the top quarterback's making $35 million, okay, maybe he does that. That's life-changing money. It'd be hard to walk away from that. It's a lot harder to sell him on that when the top quarterback's making 40 or 42. And so that's why you do it now. Question number four, this is from Charles C-O-Y-S. I'm assuming that's a reference to the Brandon. That's a reference to the soccer team, right?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I think that's a reference to the soccer team Tottenham. I'm trying to become more worldly, so I think I've learned that. With a lack of urgency in free agency the past two seasons and plenty of unused cap space, are the Texans at risk of wasting DeSean Jackson's cheap rookie years? DeSean Watson. DeSean Watson's cheap rookie years. DeSean Watson is going into the final year in which the Texans cannot extend his contract. And so this is the last year before he can actually ask for one. Do you want to take care of him next year? Again, a lot of the conditions there that exist with Dak Prescott also exist with a guy like DeSean Watson in a year, a guy like Mitch Trubisky in a year, the market can change very, very fast. And so, you know, you may want to take care of him after next year. So it's possible we're in the last year of that window. I think at the most, we're we got 2 years left in the window before you absolutely have to take care of DeSean Watson. And so you probably have at most one more offseason to really strike on having DeSean Watson at a cheap rate. Question number five, this is from James Bell. That's at BellyJ, 1984. What percentage chance do we have of an NFL franchise being based in London after the next CBA? I think that depends on the length of the CBA. Is it a five-year CBA? If it's a five-year CBA, then we're talking 2027. If it's a 10-year CBA, which I don't expect like this one, then that would be 2032. Or I'm sorry, 2026 and 2031. My cold's getting to me a little bit here. I would say there's a decent chance that we have a London team by 2026. I'd say there's a more than decent chance we have one by 2031. And I don't think this is about the logistics so much as about the motivation of the owners. And I've been told for years that there's a small group of owners that view the idea of being the first team, the first professional sports league over here in North America to put a team in Europe, is a legacy thing for a lot of these guys. And so I do think that there are a bunch of owners who are very motivated to get this done. I don't know what form that's going to take on. Maybe it's the Jaguars playing half their home schedule over there, half their home schedule over here. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I do think that the presence in London is going to continue to grow. And one thing that you have to, I think, keep an eye on is the opening of that Tottenham Stadium, which the NFL is actually invested in. And you guys can go and look at the renderings. when they play a football game there, it's going to look like a football stadium. This is not going to look like a soccer stadium that's being retrofitted for football. And so they've put a ton of work in over there. And again, it's a legacy thing for the owner, so I do think it'll happen. Finally, question number six. This is from Atonanis Fahim. That's at Atonanis Fahim. I'm sorry for butchering your name. If the Browns add Gerald McCoy before the start of the season, does that make them the favorites in the NFC North / the AFC? I still think the Steelers are the favorites in the AFC North. I still think, if I gun to my head right now, I still think New England's probably the favorite in the AFC. McCoy would make them better. I don't know if he's a little redundant with Sheldon Richardson. I don't know how much work you get on with Richardson and Ogunjobi in there. And so could he help? Yeah, he absolutely could help. Is he what he was? No, he's not. Is he still a good player? Yes, he's still a good player. So I think he would help. I just don't know that he changes the dynamic of your team. All right, I appreciate you guys coming out. As always, let us know how we're doing. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes. You can give me your feedback, as always, on social media, at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert _ Breer on Instagram. And always remember not only to listen to this podcast, but also the MMQB Monday Morning Podcast with Gary and Andy. I believe Jenny came in and guest hosted that this week. You can catch us and them all on one feed now, the MMQB NFL Podcast feed on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.